WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The red carpet is being vacuumed right now so that it will be ready for Sunday night's Oscars. The 85th Annual Academy Awards has its own website, a blog. It even has an app that will allow you to track your own ballot and watch backstage happenings during the live television event. But at the heart of all this are the actors and directors and, of course, the movies, especially the nominees, all vying for what Hollywood calls its most coveted prize. Even in this age where the foreign press and the Screen Actors Guild, the Directors Guild, and others try to get a leg up on Oscar by handing out their trophies first, Oscar is still the big guy, literally, on the block. But do these other awards predict the outcome of the Academy Awards, and do the Academy Awards hold any greater meaning for moviegoers than all the others? We're going to look into that with our trio of movie critics who we gather each year in the week before the Oscars, and we'll also get their take on the nominees, who they think the winners should be, and who they think the winners will be. Matt Brunson is arts and entertainment editor and senior editor of Creative Loafing Charlotte. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Sean O'Connell, the senior film critic with AMCFilmCritic.com. His reviews and articles have also been published in the Washington Post, USA Today, FilmCritic.com, and HollywoodNews.com, among others.
Good to be back with you.
Nice to have you. And Anne Marie Oliva is a playwright and the theater and film editor of Arts a la Mode. That's a website in Charlotte, artsalamode.com, and member of the Dramatist Guild of America. Welcome back to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Now, we talked about this a little bit last year, but I think it bears asking again. Do the Oscars matter anymore?
I'd argue that their significance is decreasing with each passing year because the competition keeps, you know, stepping up their game with the Golden Globes and the BAFTAs and all these other awards categories. And I've heard from more people this year that it just feels too late in the game. I mean, we keep arguing that the Oscars should move up the calendar. They've moved up a little bit earlier this year. But by the time we're almost in March, and we're still talking about movies that came out as early as last September or October, and it's exhausting. It's too much.
So why don't they go first? Because it seems they have moved it up, but when they move it up, the others move theirs up, don't they?
Yes, but a lot of money is spent on these campaigns that, you know, the studios carve out so that there's a first stage and a second stage, and it's a lot of revenue and a lot of jobs leaning on that.
And they did move the nominations up this year, which actually gave the members more time to actually watch the movies as opposed to, you know, letting their chauffeur vote for it as opposed to themselves.
That really happened?
Well, there was that one year where Henry Fonda's wife said she filled in all his ballots for him, which caused a bit of a mini scandal there.
Jeez. I mean, that's what's wrong with awards in the first place.
Yes.
I won't go there. Do the Academy Awards, do the Golden Globes, SAG Awards?
BAFTAs, SAGs, yeah.
Do they mean anything to moviegoers? Do they pump up box office? Do they raise interest or awareness? Do they matter?
Anytime I've tried to say that they don't, I've received a comment from people who say that there's still value to be able to say, you know, Academy or Best Picture nominee, because I'd like to see the Best Picture category go, instead of expanding to 9 like we have now, where it used to be 5, to go down to 3, and to see like a category where it was Argo, Lincoln, and Silver Linings Playbook competing against each other. Then let's really see which one is going to emerge. Wow. But then something like a Moore or Beast wouldn't be able to call themselves the Best Picture nominee, and I've heard from a lot of people who say that there's still value in that.
Well, it's very political, and awards. All you have to do is look at who didn't receive an Academy Award, what movies didn't win Best Picture, to know that it's lost a little bit of its luster.
Hmm. But I maintain not too much of its luster because it's still all over the ads. People still want to win them. And the box office does show once a movie gets a nomination, something like Silver Linings Playbook, which probably would have done well on its own, but all those nominations really have helped its box office.
How political is all this?
Oh, gosh. It's 100% political.
Very
no,
political.
Not 100%. I mean, you still have to deliver a good movie, I think, for the most part, unless you're Les Miserables.
Popularity.
But for the most part, it's who has the strongest campaign and whose studio has enough money to put behind
popularity,
it.
Popularity, it's just.
Well, see, back in the old days when we were all innocent, I mean that sincerely,
right?
Because this is the 85th year of this. Back in the old days when this first came on television and people really began to be involved in this as moviegoers watching who won, we probably thought that, you know, Bob Hope was up there emceeing. Everybody loved Bob Hope. That this was just the way it is, and this means something. These are awards that go to the best actor and the best actress and the best picture. No questions asked. These are professionals making decisions about on a professional basis.
Mm-hmm.
We've discovered over the years that obviously there is politics involved. That these actors and actresses and directors and studios and producers campaign for votes, mm-hmm. just like presidential nominees do.
Very much so.
Takes some of the luster off.
I don't know how naive and innocent it's always been, though, because even Spencer Tracy back in the 50s watching one of the shows said, "My God, have we come to this?" Because he just thought it was so embarrassing, a spectacle. So I think there's always been that taint of politics behind it. Having said that, more often than not, you know, I think they do have good movies up there with a few exceptions.
But I was reading one of the analysis columns by the guy Scott Feinberg, who writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and in breaking down the who will win and who should win, he was talking about Jennifer Lawrence versus Jessica Chastain in the Best Actress race, and he actually wrote, and I believe this, that Jessica Lawrence has been out there more often, you know, at the parties and saying hello to the different people and paying attention to the Academy members who vote, and that's important to them, that they feel like they're being recognized as voters. Yeah. And Jessica Chastain's been on Broadway where she's doing a live show and she's performing multiple times during the week. And so he's giving the edge to Jennifer Lawrence simply because of that.
Well, yeah, Roberto Benigni like paid a personal visit to the house of all 4,000 members and said, "Hello, how are you?" And they voted for him.
And walked on the furniture.
Yes.
You hate him so much.
Just
you will
anyone.
Not let him
Just
go.
Anyone.
This year the Oscars has a new MC, Seth MacFarlane. He's the creator of TV's Family Guy, among other shows, and he has a CD out of swinging jazz songs, so he's a singer. But he told Entertainment Weekly that the dancing involved in, oh God, here we come, the Academy Awards production numbers is kicking his ass. That's a quote.
Oh.
What should we expect from Seth MacFarlane?
I think a watered-down version of Seth MacFarlane,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Basically.
It always seems like they pick somebody who's supposed to be younger and supposed to be edgy, and then they shoehorn him into the humor that they want. The first few promos that we've seen from Seth MacFarlane have been like really old, musty Matrix spoofs, and they shoehorn him into the Bates Motel for a
Billy
psycho
Crystal.
Joke. Yeah, they're very Billy yeah, Crystal-type yeah. jokes. And so I think even if he came and he was like, "I want to do something really, really edgy," they'd be like, "This is the Oscars.
Yeah.
Let's
and
tone it
part of the problem is Tina Fey and Amy Pollard did such a great job on
right.
the Golden Globes. He has yeah. two things to compete with now.
Well, yeah, some people true. Say that we should expect a huge jerk, and that he says he plans to take it straight to the stars because they have no sense of humor about themselves. So
that.
Is he taking a page from Ricky Gervais?
Gervais. Well, look what it got Gervais. He got booted.
Got booted.
Yeah.
What,
yeah.
They brought him back.
And they did bring him back.
They did,
so.
Yeah, the one time. But the Academy's not the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
No, no.
The Academy, you know, has a higher bar, so they believe.
Yeah.
And so I don't think he's going to get away with that. Or if he does, he might get a very quick hook and you won't see him for the rest of the night.
So we're going to sprinkle in some clips throughout this program of the Best Picture nominees, and we're going to go alphabetically this year, beginning with the letter A, and the first A picture in the alphabet is Amour. And because you guys refused to translate from the French,
yes,
because this is a foreign language film, we're not going to play a clip
oh.
from that film.
it would translate like this: "I'm dying. This hurts. You cry now."
So this is a foreign language film, and at least in Charlotte, it has played the art houses primarily. It's a French language Austrian movie. And it is nominated in both the Best Picture category and the Best Foreign Language category. Has that happened before?
About 6 or 7 times.
Really?
Including Roberto Benigni's Life of Beautiful.
If you are nominated in the Best Picture category, why would you also get a nomination or an award for Best Foreign Language Film? If you're the Best Picture, you're the Best Picture. You don't need to subdivide it.
Well, part of it is, you know, it's the whole thing of countries nominate their own movies. And so obviously it's a separate entity of just a foreign language, and it just shows the popularity of some of these movies that they know it's going to be up for foreign language and will almost certainly win, but they like it so much that they also want to recognize it mm-hmm. among the finest films of the year, which is usually very English-centric.
And we're very rarely running into this problem, too, with animated features. We saw Toy Story 3 got into the Best Picture race, but also in the animated category. And so Why? Because you're automatically saying, well, now it has no chance of ever winning Best Picture because we'll just give it the animated Oscar and that'll be its win for the evening.
Are Americans watching this movie? Are they going to see this film?
Not in droves.
Yeah, it's a tough movie to sit through, I will say that. So I think because of the subject matter, it depends. If you're going strictly for entertainment, this, you know, it's not going to entertain you. Not in that sense anyway. So I think a segment are going, but it's, you know, it's really hard.
Does its nomination in these two categories increase audience? Do we have any idea if it's increased audience for
this
film?
Yeah.
I'm sure it did.
Drastically. And it actually, it's in the director's category too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's up for
so that's
awards.
Really impressive, so, the fact that it got both of those top categories.
This movie stars the oldest nominee in Oscar history in the Best Actress category, Emmanuelle Arriva, who is 85, well-known in French cinema, I take it?
And she turns 86 on Oscar night. So.
Oh, will she be there, do you think?
I hope so.
I haven't heard contrary.
Well, since we can't play a clip from Amour, let's turn to a clip from another A picture, the other A picture, Argo.
Okay, you got six people hiding out in a town of what? 4 million people, all of whom chant death to America all the live long day. You want to set up a movie in a week. You want to lie to Hollywood, a town where everybody lies for a living. Then you're going to sneak 007 over here into a country that wants CIA blood on their breakfast cereal. And you're going to walk the Brady Bunch out of the most watched city in the world.
Asked about 100 militia at the airport. That's right.
Right. Look, I got to tell you, we did suicide missions in the Army that had better odds than this.
That's Alan Arkin as a fictional Hollywood producer, Lester Siegel, talking to Ben Affleck, who plays CIA agent Tony Mendez, and John Goodman about the idea to pretend to make a movie to get U.S. hostages out of Iran. Now, Ben Affleck, at least we're talking about this on the way in, Sean, was stiffed by the Oscars for a Best Picture nomination, but all of the other awards.
Best director, you
mean. Have been making up for that slight for best director. So what's your take on this movie's chances for best picture at the Oscars? I got to tell you, if you go, what's that website I talked about on the way in?
Gold Derby.
If you go to Gold Derby, they are handicapping the Oscars, and Argo is a clean sweep for best picture.
Mm-hmm. Yet the experts' picks have switched four times in the past 4 months just because of the way the race has been playing out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Argo seems the front runner right now.
Yeah, and I'm sure at the end we'll talk about our predictions.
Yeah, we will.
Picks for, but in terms of Argo sweeping, yeah, a lot of people are saying the reason it's sweeping is because he was snubbed, and I think that's unfair to him and the movie. People aren't looking at the fact that he won a few of these awards, including the Golden Globes, before the nominations were even announced.
Yeah, I think it has the momentum. It may be a case of overcompensation, which is not surprising with Hollywood. I mean, he clearly should have been nominated. So it's kind of like, okay, Hollywood Academy, we're going to show you.
Why wasn't he nominated? If everybody else is nominating him, but not the Academy, why not?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, if you look at the five best director the problem is you have nine best picture nominations and only five slots for directors. So four have to be left out. And you could make an argument for all five directors that are there, that they belong in that category. I mean, it's going to come down to maybe you disagree with one versus the other. But, I mean, Kathryn Bigelow has the exact same argument. She belongs in the race, too. It's just some people are going to be on the outside looking in.
Since they've broadened the category of Best Picture from five to nine
as many as ten.
Isn't it arguable that the reason a picture is a Best Picture nominee is because of the director?
Sure. Often.
Yeah, but even when it was only five nominees, they only usually agreed four out of five. There was always that one missed one. So I don't know. It could be they honestly did think the others were better. There's the ludicrous theory that they're like, oh, other people vote for them. But if you say that, then you could say that about Spielberg, who is up for Lincoln, that other people would vote for him.
When we come back, we're going to talk about Best Supporting Actor and Best Supporting Actress and get our critics' opinions on who will win and who should win and throw in some other interesting trivia as well. Stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and In Focus magazine, announcing a night of dessert and wine tasting at Sugar Rush 2013, Thursday, March 7th at 6 to 8:30 p.m., supporting the NC Dance Theater. More at nfocusmagazine.com. And McKelvey Center in York County presenting Ruthie Foster, a Blues Music Award winner, performing Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Tickets at 803-329-2121. Technology is speeding up the world's pace, but in Washington, things have ground to a halt. Our democracy was designed to be slow and deliberative, but that's at odds with today's pace. And there's a man named John McGinnis, who served in the Reagan and George H.W. Bush administrations, who believes that we can accelerate democracy. And he'll tell us how and why we should tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, 50 years ago, Betty Friedan published her groundbreaking book, The Feminine Mystique, its relevance today, and the ongoing debate over gender equality at work and at home.
Join that discussion during the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on 90.7 WFAE. We are listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking Oscars, handicapping the Oscars today with our troika of film critics, Anne-Marie Oliva, film editor with Arts a la Mode, Matt Brunson, arts and entertainment editor and senior editor at Creative Living Charlotte, and Sean O'Connell, senior film critic for AMCFilmCritic.com. So, the nominees for Best Supporting Actor are Alan Arkin, who we just heard in a clip from Argo, Robert De Niro in Silver Linings Playbook, a movie about which I know nothing.
Oh, that's a shame.
Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Master, Tommy Lee Jones in Lincoln, and Christoph Waltz, or Vaults, probably, Vaults, in Django Unchained. Now, those are some very heavy hitters with track records in this. This is, the most competitive category of them all, though.
All previous winners,
yes.
All
yes,
five of them.
Very
yep.
competitive.
So how difficult is this to pick a winner here?
Very. This is a category that tends to think outside the box, too, traditionally, where they will go with someone who doesn't seem to be the front runner, or maybe they'll honor a picture that might not get any other wins in other categories. That's why if I'm forced to pick between those five, I'm going with Philip Seymour Hoffman, because I don't think The Master's going to do very well anywhere else, and this might be the chance for them to sort of honor that film and his performance, which was great.
He's always great, though.
Oh, he's always great.
He's
I know. Sure. The ones like Daniel Day-Lewis. I mean, imagine if you were a Best Actor nominee in a year where he has a film.
Right.
It's such a shame. You're just like, I have no chance. They're just going to get into him because he's always fantastic.
We have agreement, though, between Matt and Anne-Marie on who will win this award.
Well, I just went with Tommy Lee Jones because he's won in some other circumstances, and they seem to like him. I don't think it's really – I mean, it's a good performance. I agree with you. Philip Seymour Hoffman is terrific, but I also like Robert De Niro.
In fact, you say he should win. But
I think he should win because, I mean, you know, how can you not like a man who cries over his family? And I've seen him on a lot of shows, and he gets all choked up. I mean, obviously it's very important to him, and it's obviously very important to David O. Russell, who's talked a lot about, you know, the problems his son has had. So Robert De Niro is kind of my sentimental favorite, but –
And I'd like to see Christoph Waltz get it, but since he just won like a couple years ago for another Tarantino movie,
right,
I'm going to have to go with Tommy Lee Jones too. Somebody here is going to get either their second, or in the case of De Niro, their third Oscar.
So you're saying, Anne-Marie and Matt, that Tommy Lee Jones will win. Who are you saying will
win? I'm saying Philip Seymour Hoffman will win it.
And who should win?
Philip Seymour Hoffman. I think he gives the best.
Christoph.
And I think De Niro. Or Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Do you think it could be an indicator of how the evening goes? Like if Tommy Lee Jones gets it, we may start swinging into Lincoln territory? Or same thing with Alan Arkin or Argo?
There's no one clear leader here. So, I think they're going to try to honor a lot of these movies, and they may do it by some of these awards.
Now, you have some trivia questions that you
have. Yeah, I have a trivia for Best Supporting Actor.
Okay.
And
what's your question?
The question is, who is the first black actor to win Best Supporting Actor?
Oh, wow. Interesting. Was it
Denzel Washington for
No.
Glory? Ooh.
Mm. Is it Sidney Poitier?
Go back a little. No, he won for Best Actor.
Best
supporting actor.
Supporting actor.
Before Denzel won for Glory,
mm-hmm.
It was, I don't know.
Okay, Louis Gossett Jr. for An Officer and a Gentleman, 1982.
Very nice.
Okay.
We're 0 for 1.
Well, that's 0 for 1. Keep score of it.
I'm going to keep score.
All right. We mentioned that Amour stars the oldest person to be nominated in the Best Actress category in the 85-year history of the Academy Awards. This next film features the youngest person to be nominated in that category, a 9-year-old girl whose name I cannot pronounce.
Vajene.
Good for you.
Vajene Wallace.
Good
He's
for you.
He's making it up. He knows no real name.
No, that's it.
And say it again.
Quvajene.
Who is heard in this clip from Beasts of the Southern Wild.
The whole universe depends on everything fitting together just right. If one piece busts, even the smallest piece, the entire universe would get busted. It all goes quiet behind my eyes. I see everything that made me.
Pieces.
Flying around in invisible pieces. I see that I'm a little piece of a big, big universe.
Now, I can say her character name. It's Hush Puppy.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, well done.
And in that, thank you very much. And in that clip, she's talking about her life in the bayou, and it's taken from the trailer for this film. Say her name again, please.
Quvajene Wallace. Quvajene.
Talk about Wallace. Her performance. Having worked with children, having worked with adult actors, to get a child to be able to deliver lines as naturally and as convincingly as that seems nothing short of a miracle to me, actually.
It's a pretty startling performance, although I don't know how good it is for her personally, excuse me, that she's nominated.
Is that the kiss of death if you grow up and you'll never win?
You know, that's a lot of pressure on somebody who's had early success. And then, you know, what happens as she gets older and maybe things don't fall into line that quickly. So, I have mixed feelings about giving a nomination to somebody so young, but it was a very good performance.
And she has no experience, obviously. She's 9 years old.
I mean, she was six when this was done.
How do you find kids that can do this, and what do you have to say to them, if anything? Is this natural talent, or is this a director working with her line by line by line?
I don't know. There are some that are arguing that her performance predominantly was just a six-year-old being a precocious six-year-old. And I agree with that, and I don't agree with that. The movie asks her to do certain things that it's just her being a kid.
You ask a six-year-old. You put a piece of paper in front of a six-year-old who can read or recite the lines till they memorize them and ask them to deliver them in a convincing way, and that, I'm telling you, that is a miracle.
Right. No, I understand that, definitely. Everything about Beasts is kind of a miracle that it happened. It's a movie that really shouldn't exist.
Why?
Because it's so ethereal. It's hard to describe until you see it, but it's set in this mystical land called the Bathtub that exists in post-Katrina Louisiana. And there's so much about it that it's funny that, like, her performance can fall into this spiritual mysticism that, again, she's not giving these long Shakespearean monologues. She's reacting to a lot of stuff that's going on around her, and I think she's capable of doing that. I think she deserves a nomination. I think she gave a great performance. It was a weak year for this category, so you can get people in like Helen Hunt, who really gives a feature-length performance.
Now we're mixing supporting and lead.
Yeah. Oh, we're in lead. We're
still talking about Best Picture, because this is a Best Picture nominee.
It's a great movie. Everyone should give it a try.
Yeah.
Okay. Best Supporting Actress. The nominees for Best Supporting Actress are Amy Adams in The Master, Sally Field in Lincoln, Anne Hathaway in Les Miserables, Helen Hunt in The Sessions, and Jackie Weaver for Silver Linings Playbook. Given all the talk about Anne Hathaway's harrowing performance in Les Mis and the fact that she cuts her hair. Is this her Oscar to lose?
Yes, she's won everything. She's I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say it is hers to lose. What's been upsetting me a bit is the hypocrisy. There's been all this like making fun of her and how she doesn't deserve it and how she's been playing the game too much, and which is ridiculous because De Niro's been doing it, Daniel Day-Lewis has been doing it, Ben Affleck's been doing it. So I just don't know why she's being picked on in this regard. I think it's kind of ridiculous. Having said that, I think she deserves it and I hope she wins.
I think she's being picked on because she comes off as conceited. But that's a personal thing against
her. She comes off as conceited in her interviews?
The way she... Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think she has a very she's very self-aware of how she presents herself. And a lot of times...
But isn't that important? After all, if you're nothing in Hollywood if you aren't a product of your own marketing.
Yeah, that's very, very true. And it's weird to say that in some instances it just rubs you the wrong way because the people can come off... I think if you play that a certain way, you can come off a little more phony than you intend to. I think. Okay. But it might just be a personal thing.
So Amy Adams is nominated for her performance in The Master. What is that movie about?
Scientology?
that's another movie. I think it didn't get much notice, but I think it's an incredible movie. And I think in years to come, it's going to become a cult movie.
Really?
It's a very strange movie. Visually, it's beautiful. But it's about the relationship between this Scientology-like leader and this crazy guy who's so out of control. He's drinks and he's
by Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix, who does nobody does those roles like him.
Right.
So it's a very interesting film, but it's probably not for everybody.
It was a film coming out though that so many people had circled saying this is going to be an awards contender. It's going to dominate the field. It's Paul Thomas Anderson who did Magnolia and Boogie Nights, and he recently did There Will Be Blood, which got a number of nominations and a few wins too. And it was them attacking this, organized religion and cults and faith and all of these big topics. But when it played, it just didn't.
Yeah, just the acting
it
got singled
stalled.
Out.
Yeah, and the acting's fantastic.
It captured the imagination of the audience. It did. You know, people didn't want to go and sit through that. I think for a lot of people, people who just want to go and be entertained,
right,
don't want to sit there through something like that because a lot of it you have to figure out for yourself.
Sure. But it could have even caught on and got into the Best Picture race if I think it would have connected with Academy members more than
or
it
like
did.
Or like The Tree of Life did last year.
Right, exactly. Sure.
So Sally Field campaigned really hard to get into Lincoln as Mary Todd Lincoln. She begged Steven Spielberg essentially to do it. He gave her an audition. She went to the audition in full Mary Lincoln regalia and ended up auditioning, screen testing with Daniel Day-Lewis. And I thought she was good, but I don't think the part was remarkable. So does she have a shot?
Neither, but
I would argue that about everyone in Lincoln except for Lincoln.
Yeah,
honestly,
agree.
I mean, I know you liked it a lot more than anyone. Almost everybody at this table did, but I don't think anyone stood out from that ensemble. Just because mostly I don't think they were given enough time.
Okay.
I think it's primarily all about Daniel Day-Lewis's performance, and an army of strong character actors came in and out of scenes. They were all very good, but I don't think anybody really distanced
themselves. Well, I mean, the thing is, can you picture anybody else in that part? I mean, I thought she did as good as she could, given the circumstances. I can't picture anybody else.
Fran Drescher.
I can think of a lot of people that would have been good in
really,
that part.
I thought they had a good chemistry.
Okay, Anne Hathaway should have been.
Yes. She thinks so. So Best Supporting Actress is a clean sweep on who you think will win, and that is Anne Hathaway. Les Miserables. Who should
shocked.
Win? Who should win?
I think Helen Hunt. I thought that was an incredible performance.
Okay.
I think Hathaway, obviously, but I will say Amy Adams is going to be the Thelma Ritter of this generation. She's going to be nominated 100 times and never win.
Thelma Ritter, now there's a name.
And I mean, I'll admit that after Anne Hathaway's scene in Les Miserables, I mean, you're floored by it. You're just floored by it. Yes. It's just unfortunately the rest of the movie is so abysmal. But I guess she deserves it for singing one good song for 3 minutes.
4 million people don't agree with you.
I know.
All right.
That's fine.
All right. Do you have a piece of trivia from
this
category?
Yes, I do. For Best Actress in Best Supporting Actress.
Oh, boy.
Who is the only performer to win for playing a member of the opposite sex?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, Helen Hunt. You're Living Dangerously.
No.
Not Helen.
Not Linda Hunt.
Linda Hunt.
Linda Hunt,
there you go. That was The Year of Living Dangerously, 1983, for her role as a Chinese-Australian dwarf photographer named Billy Kwan.
So are we one for one? Okay.
I would say one for one.
He knew it.
Quentin Tarantino has a Best Picture nomination with Django Unchained.
You mind telling me what the hell are you doing?
I confirmed that Cornelia's at Candyland.
Sure, sir.
He didn't call her by name, but she's a young lady, whip marks on her back, and speaks German. Now, while it's not wise to assume in this instance, I think it's pretty safe. Point being, don't get so carried away with your retribution. You lose sight of why we're here.
You think I lost sight of that?
Yes, I do. Stop antagonizing Candy.
I'm not antagonizing. I'm intriguing him.
You're yelling abuse at these poor slaves?
I recall a man who had me kill another man in front of his son, and he didn't bat an eye. You remember that?
Yeah, of course I remember.
What you said was that this is my world. And in my world, you gotta get dirty. So that's what I'm doing. I'm getting dirty.
That's Jamie Foxx as Django, the D is silent, telling his partner, Dr. King Schultz, played by Christoph Waltz, that he's going to have to shake things up to make sure the plantation owner, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, respects him as a free slave. Has Tarantino been nominated in this category? Has one of his films nominated in this category before Best Picture?
Picture, yes, okay. Pulp Fiction.
Does Oscar hand out awards to films like this
for Best Picture?
Does Oscar hand out awards to films like this for Best Picture?
No, and in fact, I'd be really curious to see how a film about, you know, an ex-slave going after a plantation owner in such a violent fashion, if it would have gotten the awards recognition it's getting if Tarantino's name wasn't on it. I think they like him a lot, and I think that they look to recognize him. He even put this movie out really, really late in the window to be able to see a film and campaign for it, and it still did really, really well in the nominations, and so I think the Academy really responded to it.
Did you all like this movie?
Yeah.
I did. I thought this is Tarantino's fantasy. You know, it's fantasy violence to me. It's. I didn't take it as seriously as some people did. There were complaints about, how he looked at the whole situation. But, I thought it was really well put together for Tarantino. Sure.
And it's his highest grossing film to date right now,
wow.
Which I'm very surprised at with movies like Pulp Fiction. And, you know, so people, the audiences keep coming out for this one again and again and again.
The Academy has a checkered history when it comes to nominating and handing out awards to Best Original Song nominees. If you look back at some of the nominees and compare them to the winners, you have to wonder what voters were thinking at the time. This year's nominees are songs that no one has heard of. from Chasing Ice, I've not even heard of the film, Ted, Life of Pi, then a song called Suddenly, written for the film version of Les Miserables so that it could be nominated, and of course, the only hit in the group, Adele's performance of the title song to Skyfall.
Hit the Skyfall.
It's got to be a rule. This is the first original song contender in 10 years to have been a hit, a top 10 hit on the Billboard Hot 100, if that means anything anymore. Is this the winner of the Best Song category, or will Oscar take another road again this year and pick a...
It's probably going to win because Adele is hot right now and because... But I don't know what the song means,
but
to be honest with you.
Remember the Chim Chim Cheree one year, I think. Remember that now.
Well, what's interesting here is that if a song has existing choruses, it's usually disqualified. And I love the song. I hope it wins. But really, it uses the James Bond theme a lot. By that token alone, it shouldn't be in the running. And for anybody wondering why Chasing Ice song is up for a documentary, I found out Scarlett Johansson sang it. Uh-huh. So she probably called in a few favors to Academy members.
I don't understand the title either, Skyfall, but I didn't understand it as the title of the movie.
Well, if you see the movie, you'll know what Skyfall is.
I saw
is.
The movie.
Oh.
I still don't get it.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe I don't remember the movie. I didn't think – I missed the opening with the big bang. Dun, 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 dun. I didn't – the whole thing bothered me. All right. We have to take a break. We're coming back with more. What?
Nothing. No, it's okay.
That's okay.
I'll talk to you at the break.
Okay. After the break, you can chastise me. You can take me out to lunch. You can take me out to lunch, too.
Okay.
All right. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru in Gastonia, presenting the new 2013 Subaru models, including the XV Crosscheck and all-wheel drive crossover built for all-terrain and fuel efficiency. More information at TyndallSubaru.com. And Protect-A-Deck, deck and fence restoration and maintenance since 1998, including pressure cleaning of decks, houses, and concrete, finished with wood sealer and stain. Details at Protect-A-Deck.com. 50 years ago, Betty Friedan published her groundbreaking book, The Feminine Mystique. Diane Rehm and her guests consider its relevance today and the ongoing debate over gender equality at work and at home. As you listen to our conversation, that's in 20 minutes, by the way, at 10 o'clock. As you listen to our conversation about the Oscars, remember, we have very few interruptions, and you can keep them to a minimum by your financial support in advance of our pledge drive. Go to WFAE.org and support us now. We're coming right back.
Paul Cardone, owner of Garage Door Guru in Charlotte, talks about underwriting on WFAE.
It's been a very solid business decision for me. Often throughout the day, I'll hear WFAE come up. Someone, either themselves, the person who made the call, or a relative, heard me somehow through WFAE, so it's a nice backdrop to what I do. If you're thinking about WFAE, you know, it makes a lot of sense.
For more information, email underwriting at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to Anne-Marie Oliva from Arts a la Mode, Matt Brunson from Creative Loafing, Sean O'Connell from AMCFilmCritic.com, and many other locations. They are our trio of movie critics. We're handicapping the Oscars. Skyfall was the name of the place he grew up.
I was going to tell you that, but I told you for the break.
Thank you. You told me the break. That's,
yes.
And I appreciate that, because
sure.
I remember it vaguely.
And then you brought it up again on the air.
That's right.
Tried to spare you that.
All right, another best. I'm completely available to look like an idiot.
Okay,
anytime.
That's fine.
Another Best Picture nominee was Just in Town in a terrific production at the Blumenthal, and I think Broadway. Here's Hugh Jackman as Jean Valjean singing "Who Am I?" I'll tell you who he is. He's 24601 from Les Misérables.
Who am I? Can I condemn this man to slavery? Pretend I do not feel his agony. This innocent who bears my face, who goes to judgment in my place, who am I? Can I conceal myself forevermore? Pretend I'm not the man I was before. That must my name until I die be no more than an alibi, must I lie?
Now, because this
how
movie
can
is practically
I ever
all
my fellow
singing.
Man?
That's the scene we chose to represent it because it's all vocalized. Hugh Jackman is a musical comedy performer. He really can sing, and he chose to do it this way for dramatic purposes. And yet when you see the play, Jean Valjean sings this song. Did they feel compelled to do it more realistically because it's not a stage play here? It is a movie?
Possibly, sure. I think each of the different performers approached it different ways.
Did it work?
Not for me.
Not for me.
Hugh Jackman, I think it did.
Mm. Do you?
I think the director made certain choices. The actors made certain choices. I just didn't think it worked that well. Although I tremendously respect Hugh Jackman. I think he did a phenomenal job with what within the circumstances that he was working.
But what does that mean, within the circumstances that he was
Because
working?
Of the way it was directed. And the way the camera was in their faces, where you could look down to their tonsils, you know.
Okay. Best actor. Best actor nominees include Bradley Cooper in Silver Linings Playbook, Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln, the aforementioned Hugh Jackman in Les Misérables, Joaquin Phoenix in The Master, Denzel Washington as the addicted airline pilot in Flight. Is this Daniel Day-Lewis's to lose?
Well, it is, but the category is really solid.
Yeah,
I mean, I'd be very happy with any of those five, to be honest with you, in any year. And it's just, and I don't, I mean, I want to argue against Daniel Day-Lewis because I wasn't as impressed with Lincoln. But then you go back and you revisit it, and he's so good in it that if he wins it, fine. But I loved Denzel Washington in Flight. I loved what he did in it. I think Bradley Cooper did the best work of his career, but it's so hard
and
to
people that weren't even nominated. We had Jack Black and Bernie and the guy from Amour, Jean-Louis Trintignant.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Both excellent. So this was a lot of riches in this category.
Well, all three of you think that Daniel Day-Lewis will win, but Matt and Sean and Anne-Marie, you think that Tommy Lee Jones.
No, different category. Oh, Denzel. I would have gone with Denzel. I would have gone with Joaquin Phoenix.
Denzel.
Just because his performance in it was so mesmerizing.
It really was. And it's a terrific performance.
And he does this – he's done this before where he plays these unlikable characters and seems to really revel in these dark, dark places. And I thought Flight was a great movie that people didn't pay as much attention to as they probably should
have. I agree with you.
I have some trivia. You have some trivia.
Okay.
If Hugh Jackman wins for Les Mis, it would be the best – first best actor to win for a musical role since Rex Harrison did in 1964 for My Fair Lady, which I would argue is not a musical role because he spoke everything. All right. So
my trivia is, for best actor, which actor has been nominated the most times without a single win?
Oh, my.
Oh, that's Peter O'Toole.
Correct. Do you know how many times?
Eight, I think.
Eight times over a span of 45 years.
Wow.
He was nominated and he never won.
Give him 2 points for that.
I'll take two.
That was great. So now we're 3-for-1.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Well, two for one.
What was his last one? Venus? Did he get nominated for
Venus?
Venus? Everybody thought he would get.
Now, Life of Pi looked like an art film when I first saw the previews, but it is a Best Picture nominee, and in this scene, Pi talks about how taking care of a tiger he calls Richard Parker is giving his life purpose while they are both stranded in a lifeboat.
I never thought a small piece of shade could bring me so much happiness, that a pile of tools, a bucket, a knife, a pencil might become my greatest treasures, or that knowing Richard Parker was here might ever bring me peace. In times like these, I remember that he has as little experience of the real world as I do. We were both raised in a zoo by the same master. Now we've been orphaned, left to face our ultimate master together. Without Richard Parker, I would have died by now. My fear of him keeps me alert. Tending to his needs gives my life purpose.
Why is the tiger named Richard Parker? I've not seen this film.
There was a mistake on
the paperwork.
So they switched it, and he's called Richard Parker.
Of course. Matt, you liked this film a lot, didn't you?
Very much. I think along with Beasts of the Southern Wild, it's like the most visually imaginative movie I've seen this year. It's just they both have this magical realism quality that you don't see much in movies anymore.
And it's about so much more than just a kid on a lifeboat with a tiger. I mean, there's just so much philosophy and religiosity. It's just really beautifully rendered, I think.
It's a movie that in anyone else's hands could have easily fallen flat on its face. Mm-hmm. But Ang Lee did such an amazing job directing it.
He's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's one of those ones that because the 3D is so effective and the visuals are so beautiful that you have to go out of your way to probably see it in a theater, because if you just catch it at home, it'll still resonate, but you're going to miss something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are still movies that need to be seen in a theater on a great big
Absolutely.
Screen. Yeah. Absolutely. Nominees for Best Actress in a Leading Role are, may I have the envelope, please? Jessica Chastain for Zero Dark Thirty, Jennifer Lawrence for Silver Linings Playbook, Emmanuel Riva in Amour, say it again,
Quavagene Wallace
in Beasts of the Southern Wild, and Naomi Watts in The Possible.
Impossible.
Impossible.
The Impossible. Is it called?
The Possible is a sequel. It's not as exciting.
It's Mission Impossible 4.
It's a typo.
So, that's a good movie, by the way.
Which one?
Possible?
Mission Impossible?
Possible, yeah.
Okay.
Mission
Impossible. All right, so hold on here. Let's back up. The Impossible.
Yes.
Naomi Watts. All
yes.
right. Handicap this race.
Jennifer Lawrence because Jessica Chastain's performance was okay, but she spends a lot of time just mooning around, you know.
I don't know. I think that's really undercutting her. I think this is overall the best of the acting categories. These are all five fantastic performances.
More than actor? Really?
Huh? Yeah.
More than actor?
Who here is not perfect? I think they're all five terrific.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they're great.
And I would also have to go with Jennifer Lawrence, although, like I said, Emmanuel Riva does have that birthday on Oscar night.
Yeah,
and they'd love
I
to
have
see
her as
up
a
there
kind of a backup.
Take
yeah.
that award.
I see it as a two-horse race with really Jennifer Lawrence sort of leading the pack. And again, this comes down to campaigning as much as you know, as much as it does performance, although her performance is absolutely Oscar-worthy. She's 22, and if you watch Silver Linings Playbook, she brings such maturity and life experience to the role. It boggles your mind. And she had a great year because she launched The Hunger Games and had a big franchise hit. And so a lot of times the Academy likes to honor – like. a successful year.
And she's very refreshing when you see her in interviews.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, she's just, you know, kind of a goofy.
Yeah. 22-year-old.
She's 22-year-old.
Yeah.
But Jessica Chastain, she was the only current nominee, was nominated for an Academy Award last year, Best Supporting Actress category for The Help.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, but that silly controversy with Zero Dark Thirty, I think, really hurts that movie in every category.
Okay. Right.
I want to warn Sean O'Connell about the next. Oh, did we pick winners, right? Do you have a
Jennifer
trivia question?
I do have a trivia question. Who are the youngest and oldest women to win in this category so far?
Jessica Tandy would be the oldest.
That's right. 80 years, 292 days for Driving Miss Daisy in 1989.
The youngest would be
Tatum O'Neill.
That's supporting.
She won supporting.
Oh.
It's not Anna Paquin that was supporting too, right?
Right.
For the piano.
Somebody in their 20s, right?
She was.
Shirley Temple.
I'll tell you because Marley Matlin. 21 years, 218 days, Children of a Lesser God, 1986. And she was also the first hearing impaired winner.
Okay. Huh, interesting.
So I want to warn Sean O'Connell about this next clip because he said this film plays like a two-hour speech, a solemn slog to a foregone conclusion, a dreary march to the inevitable. I'm talking, of course, about Lincoln, and here is
Daniel. But did he like it?
Did you like it? Here's Daniel Day-Lewis talking about self-evident truths.
Euclid's first common notion is this. Things which are equal to the same thing are equal to each other. That's a rule of mathematical reasoning. It's true because it works. Has done and always will do. In his book, Euclid says this is self-evident. You see, there it is. Even in that 2,000-year-old book of mechanical law, it is a self-evident truth that things which are equal to the same thing are equal to each other.
I said this at Christmas time when we talked about this movie. I loved this movie. Sean, you hated it. We're on completely opposite poles on this film.
I didn't hate it.
Yes, you did. Let me quote you again. Plays like a two-hour speech, a solemn slog to a foregone conclusion, a dreary march to the inevitable.
Sounds like four stars.
The New York Times columnist David Carr has still the best line I've heard anyone say about Lincoln. He said, I spent a week watching Lincoln last night. It's perfect.
That's true.
It's perfect. It's a fine movie. Spielberg obviously knows how to make a film. And I tried to even go back and revisit it. I made it 15 minutes and I was like, no, I can't. I just can't do this. Just too boring.
I'm actually looking forward to seeing it again very much because now that I know that the beginning is bad and the ending is bad, I'm really going to focus more on the middle.
But
which
other
I
than that,
fine.
It's a Best Picture nominee.
It's lost a lot of steam because there's controversy in terms of what the truth of some of the things that are in the movie. And I think it is – I agree with Sean. I think it is boring. I'm sorry. Legislation, it's hard to make it interesting. And I think this movie is too long. It's too boring. I don't like some of the – performances, even though Daniel Day-Lewis is terrific.
Well, and we have two other Best Picture nominees whose conclusions were foregone in Argo and in Zero Dark Thirty.
Right.
And they're both thrilling rides.
And but Argo also plays with the facts. The ending of that film is completely false.
I guess they used to say winners – history is written by the winners. Now history is being written by the filmmakers or rewritten by the filmmakers. So there's a lot – there's a lot of problems with the with the truth and facts in some of these movies.
Okay, best director. There are 9 Best Picture nominees, only 5 Best Director nominees, but all of these directors' films are also Best Picture nominees. They are Michael Haneke, is that how you say his name, for Amour, Ben Zeitlin for Beasts of the Southern Wild, Ang Lee for Life of Pi, Steven Spielberg for Lincoln, and David O. Russell for Silver Linings Playbook. Is he taking the O from David O. Selznick or whatever? This is the 8th time that Spielberg has had a Best Picture nomination as a producer or director. So who will win, who should win, and will this category predict the Best Picture winner?
No, I don't think it will.
I don't think it will either.
For the first time. Primarily because it feels like Argo is going to win and and that film's director is not in the running. Matt likes to think that it'll be a Lincoln Spielberg combo, so it could.
Only for my Oscar pool.
Matt does think,
well, I like to think
that it will turn out that way. So I guess it's possible, but I think because they overlooked Affleck and they overlooked Catherine Bigelow, This will give them a chance to recognize someone who – without Ang Lee, you don't have Life of Pi. And so I'd love to see him win that category because he won recently for Brokeback Mountain. That might count against him. But of those five, I think he was far and away the best director.
Well, I picked David O. Russell to win, and I think he should win or Ang Lee should win. I don't know why. I'm just going with my gut here. Because I look at this and it's not really a representative category. So,
And Matt, you picked to Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, I think Spielberg will win. I think I go with Academy history, and they just don't nominate a movie for 12 Oscars and usually shun it completely. And I think this will be a way to recognize him.
So who should win?
Who should win? I'd be happy to see either Ben Zeitlin or Ang Lee.
Yeah.
Okay. And
okay. Trivia for Best Director: who has won the most Best Director Oscars?
John Ford.
Oh, okay.
You are batting a thousand.
Yeah, he's really doing.
Good for you. Four for one.
He can also see her paper.
Oh, I'm
going to
hide my paper.
All right, we keep talking about Silver Linings Playbook. So let's hear a clip in which Chris Tucker tells Jennifer Lawrence that Bradley Cooper has been writing about her in therapy.
So is this the girl you wrote about?
Yeah.
What? You wrote about me? I'm the girl?
He wrote about you, all right.
What did he say?
He said you guys was helping each other out, and you were nice, and you had a mouth on you, but... Whoa, okay. You're a little mouthy, but...
No, please, tell me more about what he said in the letter.
Yeah, anything you want to know, I'll just tell you in the letter. It was nothing about it. It was just a very general letter.
Cool.
She's fine. She is my friend with an F.
A capital F.
For friend.
All right, what is this movie about?
Bradley Cooper is a man who's coming out of a mental health facility where he was assigned after a violent outbreak because his wife had an affair and he attacked the man who she was sleeping with. And so he's coming out and he's trying to reconcile with his ex-wife, who she's like a human MacGuffin. We never really see her till the end of the film. Mm-hmm. And we meet his family, all the people in his inner circle, and we learn about all their mental problems, their little neuroses and De Niro's, his father, Jackie Weaver's, his mother. And he tries to connect with this woman played by Jennifer Lawrence, who also has a bit of her own issues, but it's just so whip smart.
We have less than a minute left. We don't have time for the clip from Zero Dark Thirty, but that's the movie about killing Osama bin Laden.
Oh, spoiler, Mike.
I'm sorry about that. So the Best Picture nominees are Amour, Argo, Beast of the Southern Wild, Django Unchained, Les Miserables, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Silver Linings Playbook, Zero Dark Thirty, and the winner is...
Argo, yeah. Probably.
And I'm still holding on to Lincoln. I mean, I want Argo to win badly, but Lincoln, I can't go against history.
I think it's a coin toss between Argo or Lincoln, and it will probably fall on Argo.
Argo, I thought, was a popcorn movie in comparison to Lincoln, but that's okay. Very quickly, trivia.
What is the only X-rated movie ever to win Best Picture?
Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah.
Darn, okay. You're good.
So I have to make him harder next time.
So we're 8-1. Thank you, Anne-Marie Oliva, Matt Brunson, and Sean O'Connell. It's always fun to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oscars are Sunday. You're welcome.